Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Vlad Sedler, recording on Thursday, May the 8th. I am joined by my fantastic FTN colleague at Bronx Yankees 23, Mr. Mike Mager. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, how's the week treating you?
Everything's going great. Looking forward to this. It's going to be fun.
We got a lot of stuff to cover. We might as well just jump right into it. We're going to talk some injury news, just some stuff going on for the weekend, talk about some lucky and unlucky hitters, and then something specific to some of the work that Mike does for us here at FTN regarding drops and, of course, disaster starts, something that we all like to avoid but always have a tough time doing it. Mike, by the way, how is your disasters record so far this season?
So far it's going pretty well. Just updating it, we can get into it later, but heading into the week, my selections had a 4.56 ERA and a 1.38 whip, so I'm pretty happy with it so far.
Yes, we're looking to climb into the fives on the ERA. What's the xFIP on that?
That I don't know.
All right. Talking some injury news or just some basic news here. We have a few players coming back this weekend that we hope will have players will be happy to get back. One of them was basically the top catcher when he got hurt at that point in the season, a late round guy, a breakout. And I guess, what do we expect from Ivan Herrera returning to this the St. Louis Cardinals roster?
Hopefully more of what he was giving us before he got hurt. I was fortunate to pick up a share while he was injured along with my co-manager, Mark Winoker, and we have high expectations for him. Very short sample. He won't keep it up, but the first couple of weeks, he was showing a really strong bat with plenty of power. And I think he's going to regain hopefully a primary catching role for the Cardinals and pick up where he left off.
I've mentioned this on the show before, but I've basically broke the golden rule times two, and I actually had two catchers on my bench in a 12 teamer because I drafted Tyler Stevenson and Hunter Goodman, but then I picked up I drafted Tyler Stevenson and Ivan Herrera, and so when Ivan Herrera got hurt, Hunter Goodman was available. I picked him up, and then Stevenson just hung out on my bench, and obviously Herrera too, was kind of streaming guys. And then I had Carson Kelly in for a while. I did get the last good bit of Carson Kelly's production last week. By the way, he's a top 25 fantasy performer to date, but I had to drop him in the 15 teamer. So yeah, it's been kind of rough. Thankfully, teams in it's my CLQ, and it's in kind of in first, second place. Of course, it's a little too early to be counting those chickens and hatching them.
Nice. No, that sounds good. Yeah, we're gonna have a tough decision what to do with when Herrera's back tomorrow, because we picked him up on a team where Gabby Moreno is our second catcher. He'd been doing nothing really, no power, and not the average we were hoping for. So, I think we got Herrera as our intended replacement for him, but Moreno's almost too good to drop in a way, in a 15 teamer, I think. And today he finally broke the ice and hit his first home run, a grand slam. Fortunately, he's still in our lineup. But I think so. It's a little tougher to bench him tomorrow.
Oh, wait a second. Oh, the Dodgers are playing and he hit a grand slam.
He did.
Oh, wow. And that was off of Yamamoto.
Yeah,
that
hurts. Sorry.
Yeah, it happens. That's a baseball. We got Tyler O'Neill expected to come back this weekend. Might as well touch on it here. This Baltimore Orioles, everything about the Orioles has been horrendous. I mean, they've got 13 wins on the season. Really no fantasy players of note producing outside of a late round Cedric Mullins. I guess we assume at some point guys like Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman will get going. Jackson Holliday's actually been their hottest bat over the last couple of weeks, but it's really rough. Like, I picked up a Coby Mayo share and immediately had buyer's remorse. I'm like, why did I even this guy kind of sucks, and you know, this offense is just struggling, and we're not even talking about the pitching staff. I mean, literally worst three in baseball. It's really bad in Baltimore.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's amazing sometimes how contagious either great hitting or poor hitting is on a team. And I mean, I do think Gunnar Henderson is a stud, and he will bounce back and have a good year. I mean, I think it shows sometimes when guys get hurt, you know, early in the season or before the season, it takes them a while to get going. Rutschman had a really weak second half last year, so now this is kind of a continuation of a down period for him last year. I'm not totally positive he's going to snap back into what, but yeah, this is a strange team. You know, it wasn't that long ago we thought this was going to be kind of the team of the rest of this decade with all these young studs. They were scoring a ton of runs, but they really haven't added to it. I mean, they lost Santander, and O'Neill was really the only offensive pickup they made. They lost Corbin Burns, didn't really supplement the pitching at all either. And it just seems like they've, you know, kind of squandered a lot of prospect talent that could have been used to bring in pieces to really help the team get over the top. And they just, I think they tried to make some signings, but they not aggressive enough. They didn't make any big signings or any big trades of their prospects. It's a disappointing time in Baltimore.
Well, the Pirates sent Derek Shelton packing, and I wonder how much time Brandon Hyde has, because everybody needs a scapegoat. And you know, at some point, I mean, we saw the Rangers, who have been truly horrific offensively with such an amazing set of hitters. I mean, they got rid of the guy who I used to call the hitting guru, the guy that saved the San Francisco Giants offense back in 2021 and got some guys going, like Adolis Garcia in Texas, Donnie Ecker. So he's been canned. I don't know. Yeah, maybe it could be the case for Brandon Hyde here getting a scapegoat. But I mean, even so, like somebody like Tyler O'Neill, I mean, when I see when I have him on a roster and I see a note on Thursday that says Tyler O'Neill is most likely to be back on Friday, the answer is you don't play him. You don't start him, because you know what that means. That means probably Saturday. And then, but then, you know, the other side of that is what happens is if you don't play him, he's going to hit three home runs over the weekend. Then you put him in your lineup on Monday, and then he's got back inflammation again, and then he's out by Tuesday. That's how it works.
Yeah, he's a very frustrating owner. But, you know, the talent is there, and he's capable of hitting 25, 30 bombs if he could stay healthy even for most of the season. He could provide them a lift. But, yeah, the rest of the team has just been really disappointing. Expected a lot more from Mountcastle personally. And he hasn't really shown up yet. In drafting season, myself and probably some others maybe gave too much weight to the fences coming in left field, and it hasn't really helped them to the extent at least I thought.
Yeah, to the extent that it's hurt the pitchers, because these pitchers I mean, they're already sort of bad to begin with, but like even somebody like Zach Eflin, like, okay, great, he's coming back if you have him. You start playing him in good matchups, but I'm not particularly excited for him. With the Padres, by the way, they are starting to get some of their guys back. They've had some horrendous injury luck, but Jackson Merrill returned earlier this week. At some point, they're going to get Jake Cronenworth back this weekend. He could be activated as early as Friday. Not all that exciting. He's a pretty mediocre fantasy player. I'm noticing there that, I mean, it outside of like sort of the top of that lineup, the first five or so are pretty solid. But after that, it really sort of dies down. I mean, Gavin Sheets was just kind of picked up off the streets and started hitting 350 of the first month of the season. He has completely cooled off. They've still got Jason Hayward there. I mean, it's sort of bleak in the bottom half of that lineup, but they're competing and the pitching is outstanding. They'll get you Darvish back at some point. And then the pen is excellent, top five pen in baseball.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, the bad news is the bottom half of the lineup stinks. The I guess the the good news is that despite that, they're 23-13 coming into today, one of the best records in baseball. So when they start getting guys back, you know, potentially the sky's the limit. And I just, every time I hear Robert Suarez coming in for a save, it just kills me. Wow. Because I was off him this year. And it just seems like he's picking up five a week.
Yeah, yeah, he really is. He's among the save leaders. I mean, it's so predictable sometimes. Like the guys that are just the hard fades because all the stats say otherwise, and then especially with the closers, they're just so wild, so unpredictable. I mean, even someone like Jeff Hoffman, right? I mean, just getting completely destroyed by the Angels. I mean, this guy was absolutely unhittable, and here come the Angels, and now you start to question things, right? At least I do. I'm like, oh. One of the safest closers of the season, a top 10 guy, all of a sudden, hey, maybe we're the Orioles right. I mean, those type of thoughts start creeping up into your brain.
Oh, yeah. No, I think this has been one of the toughest years with closers in a long, long time. I mean, Emmanuel Clase, everyone thought was, you know, complete, you know, safe in the bank, and he struggled and had some injury concerns. Devin Williams has already lost his job. Ryan Pressly has killed more fantasy teams this week than anything. So I mean, it's a landmine out there.
We've got a couple other teams I wanted to ask you about here: the Detroit Tigers and the Seattle Mariners. I mean, let's put aside the fact that the Tigers got to play in Coors Field, and I think on Thursday they scored like 20 plus runs. Poor Chase Dolander. Thank goodness I benched him. Thank goodness I got a little heads up in our Discord about the weather, and then I kind of looked it up. I'm like, wait a second, they probably aren't going to get a game in on Tuesday. This is a bad idea anyways, playing him for two at home, and then, you know, and he's not going to get that weekend start. So thankfully I pulled him out, you know, in all my lineups. But that's beside the point. Talking about here about the Detroit Tigers, I mean, what's going on with this offense? We know the pitching is phenomenal. The staff is legit. I mean, this is a staff that can get them places, but we're seeing guys like Zach McKinstry, who was essentially like left for dead in draft rooms and just any hope for him whatsoever. Here he is coming on, hitting over 300. Trey Sweeney going off. Dylan Dingler is somebody. Javier Baez is back in business. Gleyber Torres is alive outside of pinstripes. Like, let's start with these Tigers. What and they still got a couple of guys coming back.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who thought Spencer Torkelson would be having the year he's having after the last two? And to see Javi Baez hitting around 300, driving in runs, like, yeah, where do we go back in time 5 years? Uh-huh. They got the best record in the American League, and they have a solid pitching staff and, you know, and a deep bullpen without a lot of flashy names or star power, but a lot of guys who can get the job done definitely helps the pitching staff playing in that field and in a very weak division. But they look pretty legit. I think they're going to be around. I think this is a playoff team this season again. For a second year in a row. I mean, maybe we didn't give them enough credit coming into the year after their strong finish last year.
That's a good point. And maybe we as fantasy owners, we're looking at, some of these are, we've got some performances here offensively that just couldn't really have been predicted. And when we're looking at the lineup, especially when they lost Parker Meadows and what else did they lose? Parker Meadows, Matt Wierling. Yeah. And so it just, I don't know, it just looked like a really, really dead lineup, or at least for fantasy purposes. But yeah, they're getting it done. You know, one thing I wanted to mention is that bullpen. First of all, their starting pitching is pretty deep. I mean, I don't know if it really counts, but even like a Keiter Montero threw an absolute gem in Colorado. I think that's impressive. At some point, Alex Cobb will be back. But I wanted to mention that the bullpen, you mentioned not a lot of exciting names. I like the fact that they have lefties and righties at the ready whenever they need. You're looking at a lot of the makeup of bullpens across the league, and a lot of them are very righty heavy. they have just about half of their guys lefties, and also guys that can go quite a few innings if they need them. So they can really sort of mix and match things. You bring a guy in like Tyler Holton or Brant Herter. Those are a couple of really, really solid lefties.
Yeah, and I think sometimes maybe we don't give them enough credit, because a lot of those guys, based on how they are used, aren't really fantasy relevant in our space. But they're, in terms of real baseball, they're very valuable to the team. But yeah, they're like a top four team in terms of ERA over across the MLB. So they're definitely getting it done.
The Seattle Mariners, I mean, listen, it's another team that we weren't excited about going into the season. Although last season, when they fired their hitting coach, all of a sudden they started hitting and started striking out less. And so, you know, there's been something brewing here. Again, not exactly an amazing, you know, the sexiest bunch of fantasy names. But, I mean, Dylan Moore is even, you know, he just came back to the lineup. He's getting it done. They brought in their second round pick, Ben Williamson. He's been performing near the bottom of the lineup. Even Rowdy Tellez is hitting some bombs. Cal Raleigh, Jorge Polanco from the dead has come back. I mean, JP Crawford leading off, he's been amazing. And then they just added Leody Taveras. And that's really funny, because he was essentially persona non grata, cut by the Rangers. And now, like, watch him actually come back and become fantasy relevant. Sometimes players just need a reset.
Right, picked up by the first place team. Yeah. No, they've been quite the surprise. I confess I was really down on them this offseason, because they basically did nothing. I mean, you know, other than, you know, acquiring Polanco, who I didn't honestly expect much in the offseason from, I thought they were really wasting, you know, probably a top one or two rotation in all of Major League Baseball. I mean, the rotation was so good last year, and to not surround them with a decent lineup, I thought was terrible. Yet, you know, here they are entering today. I think they were sixth or seventh in Major League Baseball in runs scored. And if you told me that their offense would be dangerous while J-Rod was struggling, I'd be even more surprised, but that's the case. And maybe all of us are not giving Cal Raleigh the credit he deserves as maybe a top two or three catcher in all of baseball, in terms of hitting at least.
Yep.
But he's a pretty good fielder too.
And George Kirby's working his way back. He had a really nice rehab start, his first one since being shelved in the beginning of the season. So George Kirby could be back in maybe about 10 days or so, maybe another one or two rehab starts. And then Logan Gilbert, no structural damage. He should be back before the end of the month. So all things will be looking up for this rotation.
Yeah, and they recently got Matt Bresch back. And, you know, Andrés Muñoz is a stud, having a fantastic year at the closer. But Bresch, is, when healthy, is a really effective bridge to him. And I think really boosts their bullpen.
Josh Lowe should be coming back here to the Tampa Bay Rays. That offense has really been struggling. Cam Meisner is he's got like what I think he had like seven strikeouts in his last two games. So that guy's really kind of fallen off a cliff. I'll be looking to drop him in 15 teamers. Jake Mangum is doesn't look like he's going to be back anytime soon. So those are a couple of interesting players. And then
same with Johnny DeLuca too, was supposed to be the starter there, and he's still been out a long time as well.
And then what's this about the Red Sox? I mean, Rafael Devers always has something going on, and he just, I don't know. Now, what's the story over there in Boston?
I guess there's some reluctance to take over first base. You know, they're Tristan Casas got hurt, terrible injury. He's gone for the season, and they really don't have a clear-cut replacement for him. And the idea of moving Devers there had some appeal. You know, you get him over at first base, and it frees up the DH slot. They got a pretty good prospect down in the minors waiting for a call-up who's crushing it. So, that's definitely seems to make the most sense, but apparently he doesn't really have a desire to move over there, and Cora, I don't think is pushing it. You know, I mean, in his defense, I guess, if he hasn't played first before, it's not something, you know, that you can necessarily pick up on the fly and excel at. But yeah, you kind of get the impression that he's not willing to kind of step out of his comfort zone for the team.
Seems like it. And this is obviously a very, very competitive team. By the way, this is a total side question. Do you foresee anyone overtaking that closer role from Aroldis Chapman? Like, what would be your take on how long Chapman can hold that job for?
I think he's going to have quite a bit of rope right now. Slayton has been up and down this year. He's gotten bombed a couple of times. I mean, he's capable of pitching really effectively, but there's definitely he hasn't stepped up in a way that would kind of force a managerial change at closer. And I just don't think Liam Hendricks is the same guy he was several years ago, unfortunately. I mean, he's going to work his way back. You know, I mean, maybe in a month or two, if he's lights out or Slayton strings together a whole bunch of strong appearances, maybe there'd be a question. I mean, you know what Aroldis Chapman is. I mean, he still has incredible velo. He's still striking guys out. He had an effective year last year. He's been effective so far this year. But you know there's going to be, every now and then, he's going to go out there and walk the bases and just, you know, have a soul-crushing appearance for, you know, maybe a couple for a week or so. But then he'll probably go back to being a strong reliever. So at least as of now, my read on it is he's got some rope to play with.
And then a couple weeks ago, I wrote a column for my gut feelings. It's my weekly column, and I kind of broke down all the upcoming schedules for the month of May for all the hitters. And one of the things that stood out to me was the fact that the Chicago Cubs, going into April, they had the toughest on paper schedule, basically 20 of 30 games against the NL West. And they had multiple games of double digit runs. I mean, that offense just looks incredible. Nobody thought that, you know, Pete Kerr Armstrong was going to be a top five fantasy hitter. And, you know, just the team has been absolutely crushing it. But then, you know, they have a couple of maybe not so great matchups, but then things open up like crazy. It's like the White Sox and the Rockies and the Reds in Cincinnati. It's just the best schedule ever on paper. And there's some talk about Matt Shaw, you know, possibly getting him back there. He's been doing okay over at AAA. What do you think? If Matt, I mean, he's probably not available in a lot of 15 teamers, but is that somebody that you would be like, you know, targeting in deeper leagues, especially maybe in like non-NFBC leagues?
I think so. I will swear to everyone listening that we did not set this up, but on Sunday, I fabbed Matt Shaw on my biggest team. So I think the timing is good. You know, they clearly want him to be the third baseman of the future, and the future starts this year, hopefully soon. You know, he's a guy that I was monitoring in the minors. I think I had him early in the year in my drops column because he was struggling and got sent down, and I thought at the time it was a reasonable drop. He started out at AAA very cold, and then last week he was on fire down in AAA. A ton of hits, a lot of strong games. So I picked him up on Sunday, and he's kind of cooled off this week, but I'm hoping that that's not long. I think it's worth a gamble, you know, but you know, it's always risky getting these prospects because there's a lot of risks involved. You know, you got for the stash to pay off, the team has to bring him up within a reasonable amount of time. He's got to stay healthy. And then he's got to perform when he gets there. But I think it's a shot worth taking now if he's available in leagues.
Because right now, I mean, they're starting 35-year-old John Birdie. I mean, this is a very competitive team. I mean, they want to get the best of the best. And I mean, the report did come from a couple of the Athletic reporters. It was about a week ago that he'd eventually be back and take over at third base. Like, when that is, we don't know. We hope it's before, you know, before that schedule gets nice and juicy. But yeah, John Birdie, Vidal Bruján aren't going to get it done. And then another interesting note is top pitching prospect Cade Horton is going to have his contract selected. He's going to come up and make a start. And if that start goes really well, I mean, regardless if it goes well or not, I mean, he's going to get attention, but maybe he gets a lot of fab dollars thrown at him. Somebody had asked me about him in the Discord, and maybe I might repeat some of this in the fab column when it comes out. We'll see how the start goes. But offhand, my first thoughts around it is, you know, first of all, at some point, Shota Imanaga is going to be back. His injury is a light one. He should be back sometime, in, you know, probably in a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, most likely. And then Cade Horton has very limited innings last season. I mean, he was hurt for a big chunk of the year. He is a great prospect. I do think he has a good long-term future, but he has, you know what, not more than 50 innings last year in the majors, or it was just kind of right around 50. And then so far this year, he's got a high walk rate. I mean, the numbers look good on the surface. It's like an ERA of around 1.24, but his xFIP is Sierra. It's like 3 runs higher than that. His BABIP is super low. Walk rate is high. Just a lot of signs pointing to, like, you know, what is the upside of a guy like this? If you're in a keeper dynasty league, that's one thing, but I don't know. I'm kind of saying this now. I think this might be a trap buy.
Yeah, it might be. I looked and I saw that he's, I guess, tentatively slated to start Saturday. So if he does have the good start, he'll be in the pool on Sunday for Sunday night fab. And I just find it amazing sometimes how much, you know, one start or one performance, one game can have on the dollar spent on a player in fab. You know, they hit a couple of home runs on Sunday, or a guy gets a save, and it just sends the price soaring. If he looks really good on Saturday, I think he's going to go, you know, comfortably in the triple digits. I mean, right now, I do. I guess the case for it, assuming he looks good, is that, you know, right now in 15 team leagues, at least, the pitching is looking pretty ugly. There's not much on the wire each week. There's a lot of injuries going on. And I guess the case would be, yes, Imanaga's coming back, but, you know, is Matthew Boyd going to stay healthy all season? Is Ben Brown, you know, going to pitch well enough to hold off their top prospect? Is Colin Ray going to keep pitching, you know, above his head? And, you know, a guy like him could easily be moved into a long relief role if there was a need to keep Horton. I mean, of course, this all assumes Horton, you know, looks lights out. But I think the odds are very strong. Glad that you know, that he's not lights out in his first major league start, and it's a pretty easy call to drop him down to the minors when Imanaga is back. That's definitely not only a possibility, but might be the most probable outcome, but you never know.
You do never know. And it was 34 innings that he pitched in the minors last year. Actually was shown a little bit of velocity dip early last season in the minors, and then was shut down basically for the rest of the year with a shoulder injury. But he does have a good, nice, bright future. But you know what? This is something we talk about every week. You're talking about it in your column, I'm talking about it in mine, about the, you know, just taking that extra step and going through the exercise of, okay, is this rookie that's just called up, like, what is his staying power? Like, is he, like, we may not know, is he just up for one start or two? It's not hard to, like, to go to the fan craps page, look at the, you know, like, oh, I see they have, you know, three pitchers from their rotation expected back within the next, you know, month and a half. You know, most likely he's not going to stick around. And you're right, like, that dollar spent is crazy. Like, had Noah Cameron not been sent down immediately, and say another pitcher on the Royals got hurt, if he stood up, stayed up after his near no hitter, he would have been going for triple digits as well. I mean, I actually thought I could sneak him in as a stash for single digits. Unfortunately, there are a lot of smart other managers out there couldn't get a guy like that. And then Chase Petty was like, oh my God, I can't believe Chase Petty's up. Can't wait. Boom. Nine earned runs, sent back down. And now he's, you know, now we've just like forgotten about him.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, as we all know, baseball is hard. I mean, you know, you mentioned Chase Dahlander before. People spent a lot of money on him and it hasn't paid off. More recent, you know, Tyron Paris, how much money was spent on him in Fab? I mean, he's actually bounced back a little bit this week, but he's not giving managers what they wanted. Nick Kurtz is not, you know, giving people $300 worth of Fab type returns. And Milwaukee had called up one of their pitching studs, whose name is escaping me at the moment, who pitched fantastic. Oh, Logan Henderson. He came up for one start, pitched really well, attracted some pretty high bids in Fab, but was sent down, and we haven't heard from him since. So, yeah, it's risky going in big dollars on a rookie, especially after, you know, a single start.
Yeah, and all we're doing, I mean, we're looking to hit fire, right, for that one guy, but they're so far and few between, right? We've played fantasy for so many years. You just know, like, the hit rate on these guys are so low, especially rookies, like, with no experience. It's so hard. Not everyone gets the leash of a manager like Ron Washington, right? Like, on any other team, Kyron Paris would have been sent back like a month ago. Like, the guy was like, you know, 1 for 50 or whatever. It was insane. And of course, based on just baseball and regression, you know that at some point he was just going to get going. In fact, I played him in DFS a couple of times this week just because, you know, you kind of started to see like a single here, hard, deep fly balls. Okay, he's kind of getting his rhythm back. He's facing some bad pitching. You know, now is kind of the time to pounce. A lot of this game is timing, but it's just so funny. Like, you know, Ron Washington, you look at it, like, you're paying $5 million this season for Kevin Newman just to sit on the bench and you just keep giving Kyron Paris a chance. If you give him that chance, of course he's at some point he's going to get going. He just seems to me like one of those really, really streaky guys.
Yeah, I think so. No, I mean, it's risky and you want to take your shots, but with Fab, you know, you only have so much money. And so, you know, are you better off taking, you know, 10 shots on $20 guys or $200 bet? If you're going to bet $200 on or more on a single player, I think you really need to be highly confident that he's going to, you know, perform well for you. You know, now in several of my leagues, I could probably pick up Kyron Paris for single digits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. I mean, this can be like a show every single week. It's like all the misses and all the things and just how we overreact just on Sunday's games or the fact just alone that Gabriel Moreno was already on everyone's drop list or those that hadn't gotten to Fab yet. They're like, oh, I'm dropping Gabriel Moreno for, like, you know, whatever catcher is available now. Now he hits his grand slam off of Yamamoto. And if he just gets a couple more hits or maybe another home run this weekend, then he ain't going nowhere. He's sticking on teams. Right. A couple other things real quick. I wanted to ask you about the hot starts of two players at completely different price points and drafts. One is Arizona's Geraldo Perdomo, who has been a top 20 player so far this year. I mean, he's just been so good and probably a little bit lucky on with the power and all. Torey Lovullo keeps finding a way to get him into the top of that lineup somehow. Like, he, you know, gave Ketel Marte a day off just to get Perdomo there at the top of the lineup. Perdomo performed, just kind of what he does. So wanted to ask you about him. And then also a boy from your neck of the woods, not exactly your home favorite team, but Pete Alonso. So his numbers are just off the chain. And I guess maybe you can talk a little bit about him and what's been different this year.
Sure. Well, with Perdomo, I think the he's been really surprising. He's hitting for more power than he ever has before. So far He has 5 homers this season. His season high is 6, which he had in 23 in 144 games. So you'd have to think that there's not that many more homers coming, but the guy is getting on base. He's he's hitting in the 280s, and he's running more than he has in the past. He's already up to 9 steals. He hasn't been caught yet this year. He had 9 steals last season in just under 100 games. So he's running more. He's hitting well. They just can't make space for Lawler, who's crushing in the minor leagues. But I thought coming into the year that Perdomo was mostly a glove-first player who could hit for a decent average and run a little bit, but was not it was a marginal fantasy asset. And he's totally proved me wrong so far. So he's been great, a miss on my part. And then I'll get to Pete Alonso, who I will confess is another miss on my part. I liked him, but not enough to get him. And boy, is he making me regret it. The power is going to be there with Alonso. It's going to be a really good team. You knew coming in, he was going to have Lindor and Soto hitting in front of him. But what I think is really surprising this year, to his credit, for his entire career, his walk rate's been like 9-10%. This year, it's over 15%. His strikeout rate has ranged from about 19% to 26%. This year, it's down to 17%. In prior years, he's run, kind of mediocre averages, 260, 270, 240. A couple of years ago, it was down to 217. And a lot of that was due to a really low BABIP. He had a 205 BABIP this year. Compared to this year, his BABIP is 360. So, that tells me maybe he's a little bit over his skis, and the 328 average is not gonna stay. But he's showing a better approach at the plate than he ever has, and with a better top of the lineup than probably he's ever had. So I think he's primed to continue what he's doing. The average will come down, but I think a lot of the other numbers are going to make his managers very happy.
Interesting thing about Alonso is you always just assumed he was just one of the big monster exit velocity guys, right? Just based on the output, the 40 plus home runs, but he's basically had an average exit velocity was right around average, around 89, 90, and it's been around 95 this year. And then the other incredibly impressive thing is a massive reduction in the strikeout rate. So this is a guy that struck out around the league average, around 22-24%, and now he's got like a K to walk ratio that's pretty close, like not that many more strikeouts than walks. So a very interesting profile. Speaking of walks to K's, usually we think of like the Alex Bregmans, the Yandy Diaz, is obviously the Juan Sotos. Those are the guys that are usually over one, a ratio of one walk to K. And if you're over one, that's great. If you're, 1.5, you're Soto and elite. But Aroldo Perdomo's is sick. It's like ridiculous. Last I looked, and before today's game, it was like 3.4 walk to K ratio. Just like the new Arias. Like, what's up with this guy?
I don't know. Honestly, I didn't notice that. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, he's walking a ton, and he's lowered his strikeout rate. Just two more examples of how difficult and challenging this game is. It's amazing how much time you could put in, kind of researching players and still be so wrong so often. The goal is to be, a little less wrong than your competitors, but this game is hard, man.
On that note, let me just ask you, as far as batting average on balls in play, BABIP, the statistic, and how you look at that as far as, you're looking at it for free agent fabbing, right? Or maybe you might see that, I don't know, Zach McKinstry's got like a, you know, BABIP of like 400 and he's hitting 330, but he's a 230 career hitter. And at some point, you know, the other shoe is going to start dropping unless it's an outlier season. And at some point you want to get ahead of the drop before he goes like 0 for, you know, whatever it might be. But just, you know, talk to us about BABIP in general, and just to kind of set things up for you here, looking at the highest BABIP in the league and the lowest BABIP in the league, guys. I mean, there's obviously Aaron Judge, whose BABIP is 70 points higher than anyone's, but also his batting average is higher than anyone's. He's hitting 400. He's got a 468 BABIP. After that, it's guys like Gavin Lux, McKinstry, Kyle Stowers, Bryce Terang, Jonathan Aranda, like all these guys we expect to sort of dip down. And then on the low BABIP end, it's like a couple of Diamondbacks, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Eugenio Suarez. It's Michael Conforto. It's Matt McClain, Mansardo, Taylor Ward, Vinny Pasquantino. So, yeah, just talk about BABIP, how you use that in your analysis, and how it factors with lucky and unlucky hitters.
Sure. I think there's several levels of analysis. So, you know, I think it's obvious, or should be obvious to folks, you can't rely solely on batting average. You know, it's very dependent on BABIP, among other things. And just kind of, if you rely on batting average, you can be easily misled. So one of the things you want to look at is, beyond batting average, is BABIP. And, you know, it's easy to say, you know, someone with a really high BABIP maybe is getting lucky. Someone with a really low BABIP is getting unlucky. And eventually both types will regress more towards the mean. But I think that's kind of a superficial analysis, too, because I think you need to really go, you know, at least one layer deeper and see if you can understand why someone has a much higher or lower BABIP. And, you know, there's a number of factors that go into that. You know, a ground ball hitter will tend to have a much higher BABIP than a fly ball hitter, for instance, unless the fly balls are routinely leaving the yard, like an Aaron Judge. But normally, you know, fly balls lead to a much more higher percentage of outs than ground balls. You also want to look at, are they hitting the line drives, which have the highest BABIP of any type of contact. If they're hitting a lot of line drives, that might justify a higher BABIP. You know, how hard are they hitting the ball? What's their exit velocity? How many barrels are they hitting? You know, you named a lot of players. Let's just take Aaron Judge as an easy example. You know, right now or going into today, he had an unbelievable barrel rate of like 24.5%. With an astronomical hard hit rate. So, you know, to some extent, you would expect his BABIPs to run much higher than the average player. And a 400-something BABIP is much higher than what he's done historically. So I think that, you know, that's another thing you could look at is, you know, what has the player done historically and what's different this year? Historically, judges generally had above average BABIPs, but not to the extent that he's doing it this year. So one could reasonably expect some regression from where he's been. But boy, I just hate betting against him on anything right now. But yeah, he's been incredible. But so I guess my main point is, you know, I think BABIP provides some additional color to batting average, but I think you can be misled if you just take a look at BABIP and stop there without also looking at, you know, the factors underlying the BABIP and trying to understand why someone's BABIP may be higher or lower than expected. If someone's hitting a ton of infield pop-ups and with very little hard contact, very few line drives or barrels, you would expect a low BABIP, and they might be completely earning that with no real reason to expect a rebound.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I mean, all of it really is, but another way to look at it or is to keep this in mind and think about going those extra layers and pay attention during the season for when it comes to draft prep season. So remember some of these things that you're looking at, because I feel like many of us in our analysis, we will just look at the year in difference between the BABIP and the average and say, oh, this guy was way unlucky and it's going to go the other way. I mean, there are all these other factors we need to kind of, you know, look into. But, you know, I mean, an example from last year, George Springer had among, you know, one of the lowest BABIPs in this all season. And he hasn't been a high average hitter for a long while. But look, lo and behold, the guy's hitting like 300 something so far this year. Of course, we expected it to come down last year. And then on the flip side, a guy like Brent Rooker, who had the third highest BABIP among qualified players. And of course, he had that outlier season. He hit 293. We obviously, yeah, nobody expected him to hit 293. But we don't want to sort of, analyze that one category, right? Because batting average is just one of the categories. We still knew Brent Rooker playing in Sacramento this year. I mean, we didn't know it was going to be to this level of, you know, offensive awesomeness there in you know, with the A's. I mean, it's really, you know, truly remarkable. But yeah, I don't even really know what I'm saying at this point.
No, those are some great points. And you know, you can certainly identify players that are due for regression, but then the next question is regress to what? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's where the challenge is.
All right. Let's look into some of the weekend matchups. You know, this weekend, there aren't many teams playing, I guess, more than two lefties. Like sometimes we'll look at some hitters that are, you know, one side of a platoon and they're facing, you know, two of three lefties. And then perhaps that's maybe a good week to sit your left-handed hitter, but not seeing a lot of that this weekend. And of course these rotations change like constantly. I mean, like just just today it was basically the Dodgers weekend rotation has now pulled Ben Kasperia. So like now apparently, you know, Ben Kasperia is going back to middle relief. They're expecting Kershaw back soon, maybe Glasnow eventually. But now they kind of shifted everyone, and Tony Gonsolin's going to end up with a two-start week. Dustin May is pitching on Saturday, Tony Gonsolin on Sunday. But yeah, as far as the weekend matchups go, really the only team facing two lefties is the Cardinals, because they're facing the Washington Nationals, who have two lefties in, you know, I mean, yeah, at this point, they only have two lefties in the rotation. They used to have three, but now Michael Soroka has joined it. But either way, the Cardinals are going to face Mitchell Parker, Trevor Williams, and the amazing Mackenzie Gore. But I don't know. The Cardinals aren't really like a platoon team. I mean, maybe Victor Scott might get a rest. Lucan Baker was already demoted.
Yeah. I think Al Burleson might be another one who probably gets hurt by this and probably is worth benching. And, people hoping to see more of Nolan Gorman and maybe a possible rebound. It's not going to happen this weekend.
As far as some players that you absolutely must play this weekend, all your Yankees, all your A's, they're going to be hopefully scoring a whole bunch of runs in Sacramento this weekend. Anything else interesting for the weekend?
You know, I don't know how it's going to work for fantasy yet, but that Diamondbacks Dodgers series, I think, is could be an exciting one to watch. I don't feel great if I'm starting the Diamondback pitchers. You know, Corbin Burnes was kind of hurt and delayed, and so now the good news is he's back. The bad news is he's back to face the Dodgers. And yeah, I don't even know, how folks who fab Tony Gonsolin thinking, okay, he's got one start week at the Marlins, feel about him having to now make the Sunday start at Arizona, which is a very tough place to pitch well.
And what are your thoughts on Ben Kasperius? Did you go after him? Was he available in any of your leagues, or did people sneak him in the previous
league? I have two shares of him that I was able to get, and I started him this week. Although I'm not sure how they're going to use him, but I kind of think he's an arm worth holding on to. I mean, I kind of like
his. Can you say that again?
I think he's an arm that's worth holding on to, even if you know, the Dodgers may not want to start him every week. I still think there's going to be people moving in and out of this rotation all season. And I'm not sure, I'm ready to drop him just because they're now going to pitch him in relief. But yeah, you can only hold on to so many players like that too.
That's true. Yeah, I think it's obviously not what you want to hear. It's not the ideal situation considering kind of, you know, Dave Roberts flipped on that a little bit. But yeah, he his talent level, his team context, the fact that he's pitching multiple innings and he's sort of stretched out, that's a hard one to drop. I don't see a lot of NFBC players dropping, you know, Ben Kasperias just because all of a sudden he's just like not in the rotation.
Right. No, I mean, I think, I know myself and many others snatched up Harrison on the Giants, even though he's not in the rotation yet, just in the mere hopes that he eventually gets there.
And then,
sometimes, you know, in these 15 team leagues with very little pitching, you know, sometimes it's a choice between, you know, do you want to pick up an Eric Fetty or Ben Lively,
I do not. I said I do not want to pick them up.
Yeah, no. No, nor do I. So sometimes you go for the upside and hope the opportunity will happen soon.
Real quick, I do want to ask you a couple of things about some disaster starts this weekend, but just a quick look on the fab ahead. And part of this has to do with, we were just talking about Dave Roberts flip-flopping that I'm not necessarily used to seeing, but he really pulled a fast one on me with my boy Hyesung Kim. Really frustrating because the quote on Sunday was, I hope to get a start in for him. You know, he's going to be our bench guy for now. And then just the way things transpired is the fab deadline was just right about hitting, and well, Hyesung Kim was put in the lineup that Sunday, so it was the Sunday night game. He was hitting ninth, you know, right in front of his buddy Ohtani, and had a really good game, you know, stolen base, hit whatever. And then Monday, Teoscar Hernandez gets hurt. All of a sudden, Hyesung Kim's playing a lot because, you know, they're going to do whatever they can not to play Chris Taylor. James Altman's called up. Like, now it's, you know, it's kind of almost like a whole different looking team. And so, yeah, I mean, like, it was hard for me to tell people, hey, yeah, let's go crazy. Let's go after Hyesung Kim. And just literally within 24 hours, just everything unfolded in the complete opposite way. So I guess I can't blame Dave Roberts fully, but I don't know. Sometimes you just got to go with that vibe, right? It's like, okay, this guy's super fast. Ohtani loves him. He's going to come in hustle. He was a 320 hitter in the minor. I mean, in the KBO, just got to go for it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, credit to you, Vlad, you were on him to a much greater extent than most people I know. And it's looking good right now. I mean, he looks good out there. I could see him with regular playing time, stealing a lot of bases, and his bat looks pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to you. You were on it, and now it looks like he might get a bigger run than we would have thought.
Well, I have to be. I'm the president of the fan club. So, the one fan club I'm not a president of is the Daniel Schneeman fan club. I mean, I got people asking if they should be dropping, like, you know, Jackson Holiday for him. Like, no. Do not fall for this.
No, yeah. You got to sometimes look at look at the history, not just the past week. Recency bias is, man, what a powerful drug it is. But, a couple big home runs. I mean, you know, that's not to say he couldn't have some use in fantasy. If you have an extra spot, he's got multi-position eligibility and he's getting, you know, some playing time. And, you know, these are the type of players that, you know, if you can pick him up for a couple of bucks and play him for, you know, a couple of weeks until this runs its course, maybe you get some decent stats. But this is not the type of player you drop top prospects or highly drafted players to roster. So I think your advice is entirely correct.
You know, that is the merry-go-round. That is just the rotating spot, that number two spot. They cannot figure out who the heck they want to play in between Stephen Kwan and Jose Ramirez. And Kwan and Ramirez are the only two, like, consistent, viable fantasy guys. Obviously, Jose Ramirez has been that for over half a decade, like literally a top player. Stephen Kwan, one of the best contact hitters in the league, you know, leadoff guy. But that number two spot, it's, I mean, Nolan Jones, they tried him out there. You know, now for right now, it's Schneeman's the flavor of the week. They had Gabriel Arias in there, Angel Inhill Martinez. It's just like, I don't like this Cleveland offense at all. Like, maybe at some point they'll heat up. Cleveland always kind of finds a way. The pitching is good, the home park and everything, but just like, no. And Nolan Jones, man, I'm just done with him. I cannot do any more of this, you know, this Nolan Jones game.
No, honestly, this is a team that on paper hasn't looked good for quite a while, yet they always seem to kind of outperform where you think they should be. The lineup is truly terrible. You know, I don't know what they were doing. They traded Jimenez in the offseason, who was, you know, a gold glove or maybe even a platinum glove second baseman. He's still struggling with the bat, so maybe it wasn't the worst trade in the world. But I think they wanted their rookie Brito to come in and take over second base, but he, I guess, was not up to it. And, yeah, it's kind of a rotating thing. And they've also just have never really solved their outfield. I mean, they consistently have one of the worst outfields in baseball. And but they do it with smoke and mirrors every year. They're competitive. They will probably be there, you know, late in the season playing meaningful games. And honestly, I don't even know how good their pitching really is. I mean, Tanner Bibee is struggling a little bit, and he's their ace. I mean, Gavin Williams is a frustrating own for fantasy managers. And, you know, after him, it's Luis L. Ortiz, Ben Lively, Logan Allen. I mean, they'll get Shane Bieber back, but fantastic bullpen. I guess maybe that's the real team strength outside of J-Ram.
And I'm ecstatic to whip out some of my Slade Ciccone shares at some point for a mid-twilight summer start.
It's coming.
The Slade Meister. A couple other notes here on the weekend, looking at Fab. Trey Sweeney swinging a hot bat there in Detroit near the bottom of the lineup. Just, yeah, it's galore. And it's not just the Rockies. Like, he's been pretty good, stealing some bases here and there. And then some of the Reds are interesting. Remember Reese Hines and all that, that we dealt with last year?
Well, yeah. Yeah, no, maybe if he has a couple hot games, people can spend triple digits on him again. They have had a lot of injuries over in Cincinnati. And it's going to be interesting what they do. But also seems to be a lot of underperformance on that team as well.
Noel V. Marte, another guy that was three digits were spent on. He is now on the 10-day IL. Jaime Candelario has been on the IL, and he was horrific before that. And let me ask you, Noel V. Marte, where do you lean as far as I'm guessing he's maybe somebody you might bring up in the drops column in 15 and 12. And let me ask you also in that same note, like I, for example, have been holding a Christian Encarnacion strand share in a 12er just for the upside and the power in the park. But like, the injury that he has and just the fact there's always something good in waivers. Like I feel like I should be adding him. I should be dropping him, but I'm not. So what would you recommend people to do with the two of those guys?
So I'm definitely, Noel V. Marte is already on a running list I have of players to address on as possible drops. I think the only thing that makes it tougher is we got to see a couple of weeks of the good Noel V, which makes it a little tougher to drop him. But the last I saw, and I'll update this evaluation on the weekend. So I this is just very preliminary, but I think this he has a grade 2 strain, which is probably like 4 weeks, maybe 4 to 6 weeks. And I just don't think that he, based on a couple of weeks, is going to be a hold, at least for me. This with all drops, a lot of them are really team context driven. You know, if you're weak in the corners and you have an extra roster spot, the rest of your roster is healthy, and you're believing in what you're seeing the last couple of weeks, you can definitely make a case to hold him as, at least in the 15. But you know, if you're you know, facing a roster crunch and he's not absolutely critical to your team, I'm just not sure he's worth holding for 4+ weeks. And with CES, I guess it's a tougher call in a 15 team league, but in a 12 team, I think I would honestly lean towards dropping. I just don't know if I've seen enough from him to make him worth holding this long. You know, he's frequently hurt. He only got in like less than 30 games last year and he hit 190. It's a too small a sample size to, you know, weigh heavily, but even this year he only got in 15 games before he got hurt, but he wasn't hitting either. I mean, I think he's a really good he's a prospect and you know, looked very good in the minors. Honestly, the two players you asked me about, there's probably a real relationship there, because if Nowelby was still healthy and raking, I would say that CES would be a clear drop, because I would argue that it's not clear he'd have a full-time job to come back to even when he's healthy. But now, depending on how far out he is, and that I don't know, I'd have to check. But if he's back soon, then he's got, you know, several weeks of runway where he can, you know, kind of try to reestablish himself. When, you know, if Nowelby's hurt and Jaime Candelario's hurt, you know, if he performs, he's got playing time and can really run with it. So maybe he is a hold if he's due back soon, but we haven't seen much from him, and that's what gives me pause.
Yeah, nonstop moving parts in that lineup. Just always somebody injured. I mean, they're carrying three catchers on their roster right now because of one hot week from Austin Wynn, so he's still there. They've been using Jose Trevino in the lineup with Tyler Stevenson, because Tyler Stevenson's been doing some DHing, and they definitely do not want to rely on Santiago Espinal as their third baseman for the season. So they're going to need a couple of those guys back, but it might be a while. I agree with you on Nowelby Marte. If it's going to be a month, that's going to be a kind of a tough hold. Real quick, wanted to ask you about, we'll go into the details of it, but just off the top of your, you know, looking at potential matchups next week, are there pitchers that you are already seeing giving you the big red flag, like, hey, watch out, do not start these guys for a two-start week? And maybe not even just like, you know, an obvious one that's like going to Coors, but like, you know, who are some pitchers that maybe you would be looking to avoid this week, next week?
So one guy that I kind of think is a interesting case from a psychological perspective is Ryan Weathers is scheduled to make his debut on Tuesday at Wrigley. And so the psychological aspect I find interesting is that there are a lot of people who are really high on Ryan Weathers, who definitely took a step up last year and then looked lights out in spring training, gathered a lot of excitement for him, and he was drafted aggressively until he got hurt. A lot of people held him or picked him up when they couldn't have stashed him. And after stashing a player for a month, when he's finally activated, there's this, you know, finally we can use him. And there's this urge to stick him immediately into your lineup. And I think in this case, that would be a mistake. He might look fantastic right out of the gate. I'm sure Miami has taken their time and not rushed him back. And he's had plenty of time to, you know, ramp up in the minors. But for your first game of the year, first start to come back, to have to face this Cubs lineup at Wrigley, I think I would want to see him in action first before I insert him into my starting lineup. So, that's like kind of some of the things that I look at. I mean, obviously, I'm looking at matchups, you know, what are the win percentages? Obviously the opponent is a big factor. You know, I mean, I would rather start an okay starter against the White Sox or the Rockies than a really good pitcher facing the Dodgers sometimes, you know, or the Cubs. I mean, I think on a single game basis, the opponent makes a very big difference. But there's definitely, you know, some pitchers that are struggling or are looking great that I would not want to avoid. So those are some of the thoughts that go into it.
Yeah. By the way, you say Kikuchi, a nice start against his former team. Toronto is his first good start in a while. He's going to go on a little, it's not a West Coast road trip. He's already on the road, so it's local for him. But they're going to do the freeway series with the Dodgers. So first he'll face the Padres, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday, and then the Dodgers on the weekend. So the Padres Dodgers, couple of tough matchups there. Michael King and Yamamoto, the prospective pitchers for the other team. So I don't know, that's a little scary to me. I think I actually dropped. I had one Kikuchi share in one place. It was in a 12-teamer. I dropped them a couple of weeks ago just so I don't have to even deal with a problem like this.
And then, some pitchers, I think, are just more frustrating owns than others. You know, I mean, at the end of the year, his stats might not be terrible. In fact, they might be better than a lot of other pitchers. But, God, just watching him and living through the Kikuchi experience is definitely trying. Those are the types of calls that are really difficult, to be honest, because it doesn't take much imagination to see him having a real rough time at San Diego, and then you'd almost expect him to get hit around a little bit by the Dodgers, and so it might be a definitely one you'd avoid or think about it some more. But you also don't want to kind of underweight, you know, he does have two shots at a win, and two starts means, you know, he's a pretty good strikeout pitcher.
Who's that?
Kikuchi.
Oh, Kikuchi, yeah.
Good strikeout pitcher. And, you know, with two starts, you know, if he just performs even just decently, he's got a good shot at double-digit strikeouts. And, you know, if you're like me, you get to September and, you know, sometimes, you know, 10 strikeouts, it can be worth several fantasy points at the end of the year. And so, you know, I weigh the ratios more than anything else. And, you know, getting crushed just takes so long to overcome. But when you do that analysis, you don't want to overlook, you know, two shots at a win and potentially double the strikeouts compared to a one-start week.
And what was I going to say? Yeah, Jeffrey Springs. That's another one, because he gets he's going to essentially get the same two start week just in reverse, because the A's are going to play the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium, and they're going to face the Giants, another California team, but up north over the weekend. So yeah, Jeffrey Springs, not what I expected from him. I mean, he was kind of shocking, to be honest, so far this year.
Yeah, no, I had higher hopes for him. He might be there, you know, the rare case where two road starts might be better than two home starts for him. Mm-hmm. And San Francisco is not a bad park. I'd have to look to see if it's still the case. But I know in some years past, the Dodgers actually were not as dangerous against left-handed pitchers. So Springs is a lefty. I'm not sure if that's still holding true this year, though.
Yeah, so the Dodgers, it was in the heyday of Justin Turner's good days, because Justin Turner used to mash them, and same with J.D. Martinez. So a few years ago when they had those two guys on the team, they were absolutely crushing them. They struggled against lefties last year, from what I recall, like for the most part, other than like, you know, Ohtani, Betts and Freeman, who really struggle against no one. But they are what happens is when a lefty is on the mound, they have to bring out Kike Hernandez, who I guess can pop some home runs on occasion. It's either a strikeout or a home run. And then 36-year-old Miguel Rojas will be in the lineup. And then there's a good chance Chris Taylor might get a start too. So the fact that this kind of is a watered down lineup here, like Max Muncy, just he can't hit anyone right now. He can't even hit righties. So yeah. Jeffrey Springs may not be the worst start in the world.
Yeah, no, and it's tough too, you know, because some of these guys you draft as your, SP4, SP5, and it's some weeks it's tougher than others to sit them, especially if they do have a two-star week. So I don't know yet on him, but it's certainly not great matchups. And you don't want to underestimate the Giants either, because they have looked quite good this season so far, getting some really solid performances. You made a great call on Jung Ho Lee. Has been fantastic. I wish I had gotten more shares and listened to you more on him. 34, 35-year-old Mike Yastrzemski has found the founder. He's looking great, and you can't read too far down the MLB RBI leaders before you get to Wilmer Flores of all people. So yeah, there everyone will focus with Springs matchup against the Dodgers, but the Giants one can be comparably dangerous.
Yep, they can hit. They've got some guys definitely barreling the ball, and this is all only recently has Willy Adames has been heating up. By the way, I'm starting to sweat it because Jung Ho Lee is getting closer to 300. It's really funny what we look at. I'm like, he's been hanging around in the Jacob Wilson range, like 330, 350 for so long. Now he's dropping down to 300. So I'm starting to get scared, but we'll see. If he hits up over 280, I'll be happy for the year. Let's end with this. I wanted to ask you for your personal take on this Luis Robert Jr. situation, because now the word is, with how he has been so effective at the plate lately for the White Sox, they've had a little bit of an offensive surge as a unit up until this latest series. They've been getting crushed, but there are now talks of them maybe trying to make a deal for Luis Robert Jr. before Memorial Day. So we got a few weeks here, and there are a lot of potential suitors. I mean, they're lining up, and a lot of these teams have massive needs, like everything from the Dodgers could use them. The Texas Rangers could use them. There's talk of the Royals, the Braves can always use an outfielder. I mean, granted Acuna's coming back, but what are your thoughts? Lots of different teams out there. I've even heard whispers of the Reds. Like, do they need another guy that could potentially get hurt? I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say the 29 other teams could all make room for Luis Robert Jr. I mean, he's a fantastic talent. Every team would improve by adding him to their roster. And I guess we'll get a chance to see soon enough, but don't you have the feeling, Vlad, that once Robert leaves the White Sox and goes to another team, that he's going to start performing so much better? He's heating up, he's running a lot, but put him on a contending team. Don't you think you're going to see him hit even a new level?
Oh yeah. And this has been kind of our working thesis going back to the preseason, that he's just winging it, just waiting for him to get traded. And that's where the true value will come from. Like anyone that had been buying in on Robert Jr., you're doing it based on the notion that he's going to go somewhere where he's going to have that, like that Jazz Chisholm type Yankees impact. Like last year, I hate to say it, and everyone's going to – I really kind of hate it when the Dodgers keep collecting more talent, because then we just, like, get crap from everybody. But, I mean – and I'm not going to say, hey, we need it, because that just sounds like, just, like, foul to even say.
But we need them.
We kind of need them. I mean, listen, Will Smith is our cleanup hitter right now. It's bad. They just lost Teoscar Hernandez and Tommy Edman, like –
Yeah, you know what team I thought would be a great fit for him? I think that the Dodgers can be there no matter what. You put him on the Phillies. I mean, I think they're already, one of the best teams in baseball, but they've had a hole in center field for a while now, and I'm not sure Brandon Marsh is the answer. I'm pretty sure Johan Rojas is not the answer. You need someone fast to, you know, help cover Castellanos and Wright. You know, Kepler's an okay left fielder, but I don't think he's anything special either. But you put him on, you know, give this guy center field. I think it immediately helps their defense tremendously. I think he, you know, it's a favorable park. He wouldn't have to be, you know, carry the load. I mean, you could really, you know, hit him sixth or seventh even in that lineup. And the pressure wouldn't necessarily be on him, but he'd be playing, you know, in front of a packed house, home, you know, fantastic home fans every night, in a pennant race. I think he would take off, and that could be the piece that puts that team over the top. So, you know, I don't know where he's going to go, but to me, that's one of the better fits that you raised.
He's a massive chess piece in this equation, because all these teams, you know that they're doing the analysis, they're trying to figure out what prospects they can deal. I mean, it's going to be an arms race for these guys, because he really is going to be a huge difference maker in a team that can motivate him and you know, have teammates and guys that he can look up to, instead of, you know, it is very much like a Jazz Chisholm situation, as the last year where Jazz was just kind of winging it there on a bad team, and it's hard to stay motivated. Even some of the Luis Robert Jr.'s quotes over the last few months is just kind of like, you can tell this is exactly what he needs. And I'll say, I know the Dodgers have a better record. They've been producing more offensively, and they have that amazing top three, but the Philadelphia Phillies are much more well-balanced from top to bottom. You add someone like that to this team, where, like, you know, you've got Alec Bohm hitting eighth, right? I mean, this is a very good offense already that hasn't really hit its stride. And then, I mean, the pitching staff is insane. It's absolutely insane. You've got three dominant lefties, Jesús Luzardo with a comeback season, Zach Wheeler, you know, Cy Young candidate every year, the massive Christopher Sanchez breakout. You still got old man Nola, not even that old, and then Ranger Suarez coming back. I mean, like, this is a really, really dangerous team. And if you think the Phillies are going to get Luis Robert Jr., go ahead and put some future bets on them to win the World Series.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to watch. I think the White Sox are well positioned to get quite the haul for him, especially if they're willing to trade him early, which to me makes sense. You know, you're not going to keep him, and he's, you know, playing well at the moment, although his average is still pretty low. But if you think you can maximize value now, why wait until the trade deadline? It doesn't make sense to me. Teams, I would think, would give more to have him for, you know, almost 5 months than they would for two or three.
Yeah, it would be great and give us some fun, something fun and exciting like that. We haven't had a nice trade in a while. I think,
yeah.
What is the most exciting thing that has happened? It was, Luis F. Castillo, who was acquired by the Orioles. You talk about solving your pitching problems, right?
Well, I think all of us in the fantasy community appreciated Seattle for separating the Luis Castillos just to avoid, future bad drops.
Yes, indeed. Mike, any final words or any words of wisdom or last minute thoughts here before we call it a show?
No, other than I think people should be, you know, looking at their teams, obviously, and obviously you want to try to improve things. We're finding, you know, we're beyond the small sample time of the season. You know, we're 5 or 6 weeks into this season. So, you know, I think players are starting to, you know, show what they are or what they're going to be. But by the same token, please don't forget that there's still, you know, not much left. You know, there's still almost 5 months of the season to go. There's going to be a lot's going to happen that we can't expect. Players who are not on our radar screen are going to jump up and excel, and some of the early stars are going to fall back to earth. So look at your teams, but it's way too early to panic.
This is why we do it, the constant fun, excitement. And every day for 6 months, we get this action. We get the box scores, the games, our fantasy teams. There's nothing better than this. I love doing this. Man, Mike, thank you so much for coming on. If you do not follow him, you must, on X, @BronxYankees23. For Mike Mager, for our co-host Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.